can give you information such as whether or not a person was involved, the approximate distance from a target to where the blood spatter is found. It can give us information on what type of weapon was used and how that weapon was used. It can give us information on how the assault may have occurred, whether it was a prolonged assault as a result of multiple beatings, or whether it was something that was shorter-termed. Lots of information about, you know, how the event occurred.
How long has this blood spattering evidence been used?
It's been used, it dates back really more than 100 years, but it really started to really take form and be used quite often, probably back in around the early 70s. You can research some older cases over the course of time. The Sam Shepard murder back in the 50s, I believe it was, is one of the first times it was really used and recognized in our court system and in our forensic sciences. It's been used a lot more readily or a lot more often and commonly, probably since the 70s.
We take a look at some of those old TV shows, some of those old movies, and it's fingerprints, motive, and witnesses. And now there's so much scientific evidence. So is this really becoming more of a scientific field?
That's an excellent question, and I like that question because one of the things that's important to remember about forensic science is that forensic science supports criminal investigations. It really shouldn't replace them. It takes more of a supporting role. So investigations have to come first. And a lot of times the investigation really, you know, has a big determining factor in what your science means, and vice versa. Your science really, you know, makes your evidence mean something. So if you have a particular piece of biological evidence, whether it be a fingerprint or DNA sample or some blood stains at your crime scene, you still have to do an investigation as to what that means. Is it there for legitimate reason? Is there somebody who had, you know, legitimate access to that area and you leave that evidence behind? It's only one part of the investigation and really shouldn't replace investigations ever.
DNA and some of these other forensic methods can become pretty complicated. Does that make it tougher for a jury to convict or exonerate? Because to the layman, some of this might seem pretty complex.
That's true. I think it's incumbent really upon the expert and the scientist that are testifying to make sure the jury understands it. And I think that it needs to be put in the entire overall perspective of the scene and the investigation. You know, once again, it's one thing to understand the DNA and what it means and why it's there, but it's another thing entirely to understand how it applies to the investigation, why that particular evidence at that particular place or on that particular item that's been identified to that particular person is important to the case and what it means in the grand scheme of things.
How is this evidence sometimes used not just to convict a person, but also to exonerate?
Well, really along the same lines, if there's evidence that if a person, and that's happened many times over, you can look at recent court cases and really in all 50 states where a person's been sent to prison for a crime they didn't commit. And when that person is eventually exonerated, it begins with an investigation. It begins with some kind of an issue that's brought to light. And, you know, a review is done of the investigation and the evidence that was obtained and what the investigating authority did with that evidence, how they applied it. And that really raises the, you know, the issue or raises the need for what they call post-conviction DNA testing, where that accused person who's been incarcerated has their, you know, DNA tested against evidence that may still be available from that, you know, crime scene from many years prior. And when the DNA doesn't match, it can exonerate that person after they've been in prison. We also use forensic science along the same lines to rule people out or exclude individuals from crimes right from the beginning. You know, if we find find DNA on a particular item, or more often than not don't find DNA on a particular item, or can rule out a particular person as a source of DNA or as a source of a fingerprint that may have been left behind at the crime scene, we can exclude that person right away and focus our investigation elsewhere.
Is there a danger in putting too much confidence in these scientific methods and perhaps moving too much away from the legwork and the investigation by police, the witnesses and the questioning, that kind of thing?
Yeah, I think so. And I think it needs to be kept in perspective. I think it's very important to keep in perspective what science can do and what science can't do. And I think it's important to constantly weigh your science against your investigative information. The two really should coincide. And, you know, when evidence builds against an accused person, it should build and it should make sense. I guess is the best way to put it, on both sides of the fence, on the investigative side and on the science side.